We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show, presented by Church Health, caring for people all around us. Give today at churchhealth.org.
Chris Harrington joins the program. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is, of course, Body Movin', Beastie Boys, Fat Boy Slim remix. Shout out to Roddy the Body. David Roddy, who had his breakout game over the weekend.
What'd you make of the performance? Because this is something that Mark and I have been talking about sometimes on the air, sometimes off the air. Doesn't it feel like if the Grizzlies are going to have someone from kind of outside the rotation step up, it feels like he makes the most sense to me?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I've been saying for the past month, really since the trade deadline, that I, no offense to Luke Kennard or John Conchar, but I just think there's too much similarity between the two, and they really need someone who can provide them a little more oomph, a little more activity, a little more dynamism off the wing. And if you look at the candidates, Jake LaRavia ship sailed on Jake LaRavia this season with the back soreness and all the other stuff. He's been out of the mix too long. I think the ship has now sailed on Zaire Williams. If it hadn't already, I think it sailed over the weekend. It departed from the dock, and it is at sea now. That leaves Roddy. And, as a rookie, he may have nights where he's terrible, and I don't know, But I think you look at that game last night, and what you see is that, yeah, he made shots, but he's not a guy who, when he's out there, the only question is, okay, is he going to make shots or not make shots? He gets a steal. He takes it coast to coast. He gets an offensive rebound and a putback. He's crashing in from the weak side for a dunk. He's moving guys around under the paint to get a layup off an inbounds pass. He's diving on the floor to get a loose ball. There's more to his game than just make shots, not make shots. And I think they need that little bit of sort of chaos agent activity off their bench. And he's a guy who might be able to provide that.
I guess the way that I look at it is, he feels like he offers the most because, like you said, even if he's not making shots, I trust him to actually slash to the goal more than everyone. His size is obviously clearly something that a lot of the other young guys don't have. Do I think he could make defensive mistakes? Sure. But don't you kind of trust him? I just think when I'm comparing him to the guys, I just trust that he could do more.
That's an interesting turn of phrase, right? Trust and could.
Right.
Those are sort of different, you go different ways, right?
Correct.
I don't trust him, but I don't believe in the trust, but I believe in the could. I don't trust him, but I think there's the potential for him to impact the game in ways beyond shot making that I don't think you're going to get as much from the other options. And I think that is a wild card that you're going to need. And so I endorse Taylor Jenkins said after the game, it's going to be nine for a while. That means nine meaning David Roddy staying in the rotation. Although if and when John Morant comes back, you got a question there, because then that would make it 10. And then you have a David Roddy versus John Conchar question. But I think Roddy's earned himself some runway. He's going to be in the rotation now for a little bit, and we'll see if he can develop that consistency and earn it as we head to the playoffs.
David basically doubled up Conchar in terms of minutes on Saturday. Was that a tip? Was that Taylor Jenkins tipping his hand, or do you think that was Taylor Jenkins going with the hot hand?
That was going with the hot hand. I mean, there was a moment in that game in the fourth quarter where, you know, Tyus Jones was on the bench to start the fourth quarter. And so then you get to, you know, a certain point midway through the quarter or a third of the way to the quarter, it's time to bring Tyus Jones back into the game. I think in a normal scenario, Tyus Jones would have checked in for David Roddy. But Roddy had the hot hand, and so Tyus Jones checked in for Santi Aldama. And they basically played Roddy at the power forward down the stretch of that game. I think that was a response to the game Roddy was having. That was not normal rotation stuff. And so that boosted Roddy's minutes in that game. But I do think, and I'm saying the game before against Golden State, Conchard played more than Kennard.
Yeah.
So I think, especially after Ja comes back and they have their two-point guards, if and when Ja comes back, if they have their two-point guards, to me there's a real question about how you're soaking up those minutes, those backup minutes 2 through 4, with Kennard, Conchar, Roddy, and Aldama. Like, something's got to give, right? And I think that's a real competition among those four players, really, as good as Aldama's been. Because one of my things with Roddy, and I've gone on a journey, right? I was one of the biggest Roddy skeptics when they drafted him early in the season, and then, you know, a month ago I'm calling for him to play more. So this has been a journey of discovery for me. But I one of my things with Roddy is I don't trust the foot speed guarding on the perimeter that much. I still don't. He played when he had his huge fourth quarter, he was playing power forward.
Yeah.
I think small ball four is what his best use is.
What have you made of the minutes without Tyus? Because, you know, essentially you pointed out, like, they're basically going no point guard, and we saw Golden State take advantage of that. What did you think about on Saturday?
I think it's generally gone okay. I mean, the thing about it is, I mean, it'll be very game to game, but it's generally gone okay. And the thing about it is that it actually worked great last season, because they did that a lot last season, because they didn't carry a third point guard. And Ja missed 25 games. And so that was 25 games in which you did not have a backup point guard, and you were just doing. Now it worked better last season because it wasn't Desmond Bain, Luke Kennard, John Conchar. It was Desmond Bain, De'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson. And Kyle Anderson is basically a 6'9 point guard.
Yeah.
And so that, I think and the defense was better. So I think it worked better last season with the personnel they had. But I think it's worked okay. And I do think it's notable that, like, you know, you're late in the season and you're missing a point guard and you have a choice to make. And is it, are you playing without a point guard or are you playing Kennedy Chandler? And I know Chandler's very young and he's a rookie, but he was a high second round pick. I think, you know, when you pick a point guard in the 30s, your hope is that when you have an injury, you know, that he steps up. And this is, I don't know, not necessarily a commentary on him, it's a commentary on the coach and, like, the coaching staff at this point in the season, what they trust and what they don't. But I do think it's notable that you're carrying this third point guard and you're not using him.
How big of the concern is the depth right now?
Well, you know, you're down 3 of your top 7 players, and so that really presses your depth. I think this team structurally went into the season with much bigger depth questions than they had a year ago. I Aldama taking a real step forward, flipping that green spot, which had basically been an empty spot for Kennard, who can play. And now Roddy, you know, you needed at least one of your, if you were to carry 3 rookies on the roster, one of them is going to have to play. It looks like maybe Roddy is finally giving you that one. You check at least the one box. But they're carrying a lot of dead weight at the back end of the roster on top of now the injuries they've had. And so it feels like they can get by right now, but they can't withstand any more injuries.
Yeah, I just kept thinking on Saturday watching the game, man, this feels fragile. Like, and I get it.
Yeah.
You know, like, to your point, you're down 3 of your top 7. No duh, it feels fragile. Like, I mean, of course, but – like, I just think about it in terms of, like, tonight. I suppose the bigger question is whether or not Kyrie plays. Luka's going to be out. But then I just started saying, like, man, I felt like Dallas had more shot making, at least. Like, I know the Grizzlies had the fourth quarter, and it's largely just really Roddy was making shots. But I don't know. I just found myself thinking, like, this is going to be quite the balancing act to just try and, like, tread water.
Yeah, I mean, that was the game. I mean, you're playing at home against the Dallas team without Luka or Kyrie, and that's a very top-heavy roster without his top. and you're down 11 early in the fourth quarter, like, you know, people ended up feeling great about that game because it was spectacular to watch what Roddy did, and you had make this fourth quarter comeback. But that could have easily been a serious bummer of a game. And it, you know, I think these four games without since Morant and Clark have been out, you know, you're 2-2. You ran off on Golden State. The other three games were competitive, and like you won in the fourth quarter at home, and you lost on the road, basically. And so it's, you know, you don't look like the 2 seed in the West right now, but you do look like a competitive team. Like it has been a little bit of, I think it's had a calming effect of reminding that, like, you know, all is not lost in terms of just day to day, like competing in basketball games without John Morant, Steven Adams, or Brandon Clark. There's still enough talent on this team that you're a respectable team, even if you're not a team that's going to get to a conference finals without those guys.
Are the fourth quarter issues solved?
No, of course not. I mean, it's one game. And David Roddy got hot. And so we'll see. But, you know, we'll see. They're going to play again tonight, right, in Dallas. We'll see what they look like.
What do you make about tonight? Because the line opened in favor of the Grizzlies, and then it's quickly moved to Dallas, and it's been growing. I think it's now up to 2. I think that suggests to me that they're expecting Kyrie to play. I that could also just be, hey, sharp bettors have seen what the Grizzlies are on the road. They're just betting against them. So it may not be a reflection of Kyrie, but I don't know. This does feel...
Has Luka already been declared out?
Yes, they have declared him
okay.
out.
Okay. So Luka's out. You know, Kyrie was in Memphis. There was some question. Like, I was there at shoot around over the weekend, and I was talking to Tim McMahon, who's from ESPN, who operates out of Dallas, and he was there, and he was like, I don't think Kyrie's even in Memphis. And then they opened it up, and Kyrie was there. He was out on the floor, like, doing shoot around stuff, taking shots. Ended up not playing. And so I would guess, you know, my friend Matt Hurlicka made this point on Twitter, and I sort of agree. Like, when you're Dallas and you trade for Kyrie Irving, you're not expecting him to, like, be questionable and sit, you know, when you're playing, like, you know, the 2 seed in the West in the middle of the playoff stretch, right? Like, surely.
Especially when you're in a position
he's going to go.
Well, like, you're in a position that they're in, which is, I mean, every game matters for them right now.
Right.
You know, one game's kind of the difference. One game has been the difference between avoiding the play-in or being in the play-in. I mean, at a certain point, like, man, I get it, but, like, is this just a classic example of Kyrie being Kyrie?
I think so, and I think he's going to, like, you know, go somewhere else in the summer, unless Dallas gives him, like a 4-year max contract.
Yeah.
He'll probably just head out. Dallas is really on – they are dangerously close, if not already there – to the Anthony Davis in New Orleans track.
Yeah. With Luka, you mean.
Yes, with Luka. You have this generational talent, and you failed to build a good structure around them, and now you're chasing it, right? You're throwing good money after bad, trying to do something, and it feels like Kyrie's going to walk this summer, and like the Luka stuff is going to get really hot next season is what it feels like.
Is it hard to build around Luka? Like, I was trying to think about that because it seems like it should be easy, right? But why is it? It feels like it shouldn't be this difficult, but they're really struggling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could have signed Jalen Brunson to an extension. Like, you know, he's like having an All-Star season in New York. That would have been cool. They have not done. They and you watched the game the other night. Like, Jaden Hardy and Jalen Green both look like maybe they're pretty good. Maybe they finally found something with a couple of young players.
Yeah,
but it's a long time that they haven't. There's a long drought in Dallas where they just weren't developing players. I mean, you get Luka in the top with a third pick or a fourth pick or whatever it was, and that's easy. But there's a long period. They don't have their Desmond Baines there. They don't have their Brandon Clarks. Like, they just really struggle to develop talent out of the draft and then spend all their time, you know, chasing free agents that blew up in their face. Like, the real DeAndre Jordan, like, you know, lock them in a room stuff that was going on or whatever.
What have you made of Desmond recently? Because on the one hand, I'm just sitting there going, are we just really judging whether or not he plays well, whether or not he makes shots? Because he doesn't seem like he's demonstrably – it feels like night to night he's consistent, but yet again, it feels like, well, it's a night that he played pretty well, but I'm just sitting there wondering, like, well, is it just because he made shots?
I just think it sort of is what it is at this point, where he's like really good, but I think he's operating at about 90% capacity. That's been my feeling ever since he's come back from that injury, that he just doesn't have the upper reach that he had late last season and that he had early this season. That, like, every once in a while he's just going to jump up and get you 36 or whatever. I just don't think, and it's been pretty, not always like this, but a lot of the times he builds his numbers early in game.
Yeah.
Like, I think he had 17 in the first half. I think that's right, against Dallas. He ended up with, like, 22 or 23 or whatever. He did hit the big shot of the game from the corner late. But he is not – I just don't think he has the capacity right now to, like, get on my back. I'm taking 25 shots. I'm scoring 40. Like, I just don't think that – I think he has that ability, but I don't think he has that right now.
Yeah, 17 of his 25 came in the first half.
Right.
What did you make about Jaren? Because it was a little bit of a slower start. I still felt like, though, he kept his aggression for the most part.
This has been a little bit of a story with him, and I think it's sort of, you know, half full, half empty kind of thing, depending on how you look at it. He was pretty bad, you know, for the first half or so.
Yeah.
And then he had 7 of his 14 in the fourth quarter. Like, he was good in the fourth quarter. And I feel like that's not – I feel like he's had games like that lately where – where he finally comes around, it has a big fourth quarter, it hasn't been as good early. And, like, you'd rather him be good early as well, especially against that matchup. But I do like that when he has a bad first half, they're no longer, like, going away from him. Like, it's not, you know, you're not pulling the plug on it anymore. And I like that he plugs away and has gotten better as games have gone on, sort of the opposite of Bane. Like, Bane does it early, Jaren does it late. There's been a little bit of that lately, I feel like.
What do you make of tonight? Because on a certain level, you know, hey, it's the Grizzlies on the road. It's the Grizzlies on the road on national TV. It feels like it has all the makings of being kind of the disappointing night. But at the same time, like, I almost feel like as this group just tries to, you know, kind of stabilize until Ja Morant returns, it almost feels like there's like a lack of expectation. So I feel like you can get, like, I feel like I've been pleasantly surprised by their performance without Ja.
Yeah. I mean, you never want to put too much weight into any individual game. I feel like tonight's a pretty good test of where they are right now.
Yeah.
Because they played four games since they lost both Morant and Clark. And the first two were, like, you know, 2 games and 3 nights in L.A., and you're already on the road when this stuff happens. And while those games were competitive, there's got to be a little bit of, like, a shell shock kind of, like, you have to be going through a little bit of a daze as a team, because this is just blown up in your face, like, all of a sudden.
For sure.
And then you come home, you've had a few days, you come home, you get to sort of take a breath and settle yourself, and you win the 2 games at home. And now, like, this is a pretty good test. Like, you're on the road. You're against a good team, not a great team. We're going to assume Kyrie plays. You're playing against one star, not two. It's kind of a toss-up kind of game. And so this is a good – again, one game can mean whatever, but I think it's a good sort of – this is the most neutral game they've had since all this stuff has happened in terms of trying to set a baseline for what you think you look like.
The New York Post had the video and, I guess, details of Ja Morant. Without getting into specifics of it, did the release of the video change any way that you feel about potential punishment, lack of punishment, whatnot? Did any of the story change any way of how you feel about Ja Morant's return?
I don't feel like that. What to the degree that there's new in there. And the most meaningful news is probably that it was 2 nights instead of one.
Yeah.
Not what was happening those nights, right? I don't think that should have any impact on punishment or return issues relative to the team or the league. I think on one level, there's a lot that's like, I don't know about this. This is getting to invasion of privacy issues.
Sure.
that I wonder about. On the other hand, there are relevant team issues in terms of, you know, that report that came out about the players meeting and Steven Adams saying we need to take things more seriously on the road. And so there is, you know, setting aside, like, whatever you're doing at the club, the fact that you're, like, at the club the night before and the night after, you know, these road games – and you have a team issue of people who saying like we need to button down and get more serious on the road, like that's a real issue relative to team. That is not an issue relative to Ja Morant's status as an active basketball player in the NBA, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was trying to think about this yesterday, changing topics on you. Have we had an Oscars on the night that we get the NCAA tournament bracket? That was new, right?
I was thinking about that.
I don't remember this.
That double dip.
Because I was like, this is a lot of TV right now for me.
No, I haven't fully absorbed the bracket because I actually was watching the Oscars for better or worse. And so I glanced at the bracket, but normally I would have like spent a little bit more time with it on a Sunday night. But instead I'm like, you know, I can do this tomorrow or Tuesday before I fill my sup out. I'm going to watch the Oscars tonight. I was thinking about that last night. I don't remember those things colliding before.
Yeah, I feel like now the Oscars date is not like it's always this week. Like it does fluctuate. Like I know that because I can even remember. I think there's even been years where maybe it was like at the end of February, whatnot. And obviously in the like the whole COVID, like I feel like it's changed everything, but that to me felt like that was overwhelming, and it was overwhelming because I wasn't quite prepared for it. Even though, hey, if you just get out a schedule, you could realize that was going to be the case.
It's kind of an interesting collision because it's like two things that are still like meaningful to a lot of people and still popular, but not as meaningful and popular broadly in the culture as they each were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Like college basketball and the movies are both in a little bit of a down period relative to like, you know, when we were kids.
Oh, I definitely think that's fair. Cause like, that was the other thing that I was trying to realize. Like I've not seen everything everywhere all at once, but all I kept thinking about is every person I know and I trust with movies has had some version of this review. It's a good movie. It's not as good as it wants to be, and it's not as good as it's getting hyped to be. And
I think all those things are true, but I would also make the point that like the Oscars are often bad. And so to me, like that's an above average Oscar winner.
Well,
I mean, you're talking about an award that's given best picture to Crash and The King's Speech and
yeah.
some really ridiculous stuff back in the 60s, like some really crazy, stupid stuff way back. And so it's not like every year The Godfather wins best picture.
No, and like that was the other thing I was thinking. I was like, this, it's all relative. Like in the end, you don't have to be the best movie of all time. You have to be the movie that most people vote for in that given year. I was also a quick little story. I was super happy for Jamie Lee Curtis. My senior year, I was eating dinner one night, and she was sitting at the table behind us, and then she just, like, started chatting us up, and she was very pleasant and nice. Like, that was the closest I've ever seen, like, a star when she gave her acceptance speech, which I thought was pretty good. I was like, that was the one thing that got me to react. I was like, good for her, because she was so nice to us, like, when we were eating dinner.
She seems like she'd be a good hang.
Yeah.
My version of that with the same movie is that with those directors who I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Got up to give their first acceptance. I was like, and the Oscar for guys who seem most like dudes I hung out in the dorm with at college goes to the Daniels.
Yes.
Like
and
I'm pretty sure I went to college with those dudes.
Sweetest bolo tie. I think,
yeah.
I think went to the one. The bolo tie goes by Dan. And the other one went by Daniel, right?
I don't know. I just know that I had a flashback to some dude holding court in the dorm lounge in McAllister College in 1992 when that dude was talking.
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about last night is how can I be happy that Brendan Fraser won an Oscar, but can I also be like, I still don't want to see that movie?
Yeah, I don't want to see that movie either. I saw all 10 of the Best Picture nominations, and I have a physical DVD screener of The Whale, and I am not going to put that in. I'm not slipping that in. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah, that was kind of like, I was like, yes, I'm happy for him, and I was like, I still don't want to see that. Anything else that struck you from last night?
You know, to the degree that it matters, I wish it had been a little bit more variety in the winners. It's a little bit too much everything everywhere and too much All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
You know, Tar and Banshees of Inisherin and Fablemans, I think, all got shut out. To me, that is not indicative of sort of the year in movies. It was a little bit too clustered around those two movies for me.
All right. And then now you said you're going to start digging into your bracket. Is this the least?
I got to figure out where I can justify Arkansas in the Final Four. I got to figure out whether I can justify that.
Are you ready? They are.
Yeah.
They're my team. And here's why.
There we go.
They will have a 10-minute stretch of basketball where you sit there and you watch these guys and you're like, oh, my God, these guys are amazing. They're long. They're athletic. They're amazing. And then there's like 25 other minutes to 30 other minutes of basketball. You're like, oh, yeah, this is why they're going to be an 8 seed. But let me tell you what, if they put it together, oh, watch out.
I watched them early in the season, and I thought, like, I was convinced, this is the best team since Corliss Williams.
Yes, they have so much talent.
And then they lost the one forward who's really good, the Trayvon Brazil guy, to injury. And then the Nick Smith guy is sort of like, he's back now, but he's had lots of injury issues.
Yes.
But I fell totally in love with Anthony Black. That's my new favorite basketball player. He's like slow-mo, but not slow. Just in terms of that feel for the game. And that Ricky Council dude is like a classic, this guy's great in college.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of perimeter talent on that team. Musselman's a really good coach. I think they've had a disappointing season since then. But, like, that team's got some upside.
They've got some upside. And then, you know, you look at they're matched up with Kansas. And Kansas is that team where if Grady Dick is not scoring, they really, really struggle to score. Like, Texas took advantage of them. I just feel like that's not the worst spot for Arkansas. If you've had a year where you probably underachieved, this isn't the worst draw because Illinois is a team that will take a nap on you, unlike any other team. And then Kansas, you know what I mean? Like, it's also really hard to repeat. Like, it's really hard to repeat, especially when you're replacing, like, 70% of your offense.
This is all the cosign I need. I'm doing it. But at Memphis, I feel like I definitely like them in game one, but I feel like that's kind of a rough draw for them to have to go up against the one seed in the second round. That seems like not great. But I got to say, Kendrick Davis is the classic, for me, who doesn't watch a lot of college basketball. Like, my strategy every year is, like, who's got the best upperclassmen league guards? And guess what? It's that dude.
Well, and further, when you look at Purdue, Zach Edey is like a – he's mesmerizing to watch because he's so big. And
right.
But they have very young guards, and they've been very inconsistent down the stretch. And I just keep thinking, like, when's the last time a team with a true, like, traditional back-to-the-basket big just put a team on his back in the tournament? Like, we typically don't see those guys end up, like, taking over the tournament.
No, I mean, Kendrick Davis is your classic Shabazz Napier, like, you know, this is what college basketball is for kind of guy. So, who knows?
Chris, we appreciate it. Have a good rest of the day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.